Welcome to the First in Football podcast. For the first time in 2020, I'm Jerry Price. I'm joined by the Charles W. Caldwell Jr. head coach of football at Princeton, Bob Sorace. Coach, welcome.
How you doing, Jerry?
Doing pretty well. We got a lot to talk about here football-wise, even though it's the middle of February. A lot of stuff's been going on. Let us start, before we get into all of that, let's start with we've replaced the 150th as the key number with 500, which is we went from the 150th anniversary of the first college football game to the 500th Ivy League championship for Princeton, which the wrestling team won a couple of weeks ago. Princeton, the first team in the league to reach 500 by a wide margin. Let's talk a little bit about two things. One is your role as having won a championship as a player and a head coach, and there's some others on that list, and don't want to exclude anybody, but just off the top of my head, Mitch Henderson, Jim Barlow, I thought of some others, Maureen Davies with softball, Emily Goodfellow must have done it, Louise Gengler, I'm guessing, did it. I'm sure there are a million other people that I'm forgetting. I'll probably try to put together the full list, but as one of the, it's not a huge list, and you're on it, so talk a little bit about the 500 Ivy titles and also the pride that you have in your contributions.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big round number guy. I play along like the E level, and that's where, you know, I'm down. We come down here, we get to talk communications and media and sports information, but I'm excited for 501 and 502 and 503, and I think coaches, we live in that world, but it's really, when you think back, it's really awesome to see the success and the level of success and the support from the university, the efforts the athletes make and the sacrifices the athletes make to be successful and the commitment they make to be great at what they do, to truly be great. It's hard to win an Ivy League title. I know it isn't football. You've been around way more sports than I am, but I'm friends when I was here with other athletes. I know the other coaches. I know many of the other athletes. I know how hard it is to be successful. So for us to do it as a athletic department levels higher than our competition, it's pretty cool.
So let's talk about the 500th, because every coach here I've talked about, if I said to you, pick the team that you want to get to 500, even though 500 is, you know, you're not a big milestone guy, I think almost unanimously they would have said Chris Ayers and the wrestling team.
I would have said me. But I'm not being sure. But I will say this. This is what's cool.
It couldn't be you. It was the winter.
Okay. I mean, I love Chris Ayers and I love wrestling. Like, wow. I didn't win a lot when I first got here. They didn't win at all when he first got
right,
here.
Exactly. I mean, and it was 0-15 in his first 15 Ivy matches, 0-35 yeah. overall at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah, I read, you know, I told Saxon it was awesome when he wrote the Guest
Craig
Tiger.
Saxon.
Craig Saxon, when he wrote the Guest Tiger blog, and he was talking about Johnny Forfeit. And I'm thinking, man, they didn't even have enough guys. And for them to build a program literally from scratch and then to overcome a team like Cornell, who is a top five team most years.
17 straight Ivy titles.
17 straight Ivy titles, 90 plus straight Ivy League wins. And to do that in the manner they did it and to be the round number 500 is really cool when you're writing the story.
So your guys were very supportive of the wrestling team for the two matches. I was at Columbia and Cornell the weekend they won the championship. There was, you know, lots and lots of football guys there being supportive, being loud.
Yeah, I think, and I hope we do that with every sport, but I think everybody at Princeton, I was joking a little bit earlier, but everybody at Princeton understands what the other athletes do and the efforts they make, and there's a respect that we all have. And, you know, as I said, the respect when Pat Brucky came in front of our head coaches, and I always was like, this guy is one heck of a competitor, but now it's like, I respect the heck out of this guy for what he's trying to accomplish and the mission that he and his teammates were on. And our guys are in the dining halls with those guys, in the training room with those guys, in the eating clubs with those other guys and girls. Like we're going to be at women's lacrosse games. We're going to be at the men's. I was at the men's lacrosse game on Saturday. Really cool to see them open up with such a flurry of points and to see how aggressive they were and to get off to a great start, and it's no different. Women's hoops was up 49-7 at one point. the other day. And I'm thinking 49-7. Like, what is that the equivalent of football? 160-3? That's unfathomable, like what they're doing.
I think what's really great about them is they were down 12-0 to Yale on Friday. I don't know if you saw that. They were
I did.
And basically, the message was everybody calm down and just play. And final score is 55-37.
Yeah, they won by like 16, 18 points. And were you sweating when they were down 10-12?
No.
Neither was I. I was like, okay, they're just going to win by less.
Well, I mean, when you can defend the way they can defend, you're never out of a game.
Yeah, they're just playing such great defense, and you got a superstar in Bella, you got Carly, you got people coming off the bench, and they play as a team. And as a coach, you admire when they play as a team. Like that picture of the wrestlers when they won, that was really cool. I don't know who the little young kid was who was given the 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3. But he knew that they were about to win the whole thing. He knew the significance of this. And as we get to the seriousness of this, man, that I don't know how old that young man was. And I don't know if it was one of the coach's kids. But he knew the sweat and blood that these guys put into this. And the excitement to see that team jump on top of each other and celebrate something is why we all do this in our own sports.
Yeah, it was the dramatic ending of the match that clinched it. Travis Stefanik or Stefanik, I'm not even sure how you pronounce his last name. And the last 15 seconds, he won that match, and that's what gave Princeton deciding points. Let's shift a bit to football. Some major staff changes for you. We'll start there. Sean Gleason goes from your staff to Oklahoma State to Rutgers. Andy Orick takes over as offensive coordinator. Now he is at Rutgers, you're losing guys to Power 5 teams, which, I guess you have to be pretty happy about. It shows the sign of where your program is, even though it puts you in a position of having to replace them. And so now it's Mike Willis's turn to be the offensive coordinator. Talk a little bit about, those two guys going on to Power 5, and then talk about Mike and what he brings.
Yeah, and Jamel Matunga going there as well. And, my first thought was, I know you don't like rap, But old school rap, let's bring it back to like old school rap, because in the 80s, I'm still a huge old school rap guy. And there was this group called the Sugar Hill Gang. You've heard Rapper's Delight, right?
Yes.
Yes, you've heard, everybody's heard Rapper's Delight. And they had this guy named Big Hank, right? Big Hank has his bars, he has his lines. And at one point he comes out with the C-A-S, the A-N, the rest is F-L-Y, or the O-V-A, the rest is F-L-Y, the Casanova Fly. He stole somebody else's rhymes. And that's like the worst thing you can do, right? I don't think it's looked at that in football. It's kind of, it's awesome when somebody is taking your style or somebody feels it's quite flattering or humbling. And when you work together with people, no different than when Craig Saxon left and you guys work together for so long, and day to day you guys are playing squash, you guys are doing all those things. It's no different in the coaching world. Every day we meet, every day we work to come up with plans or schemes or motivational things to be successful. We really work hard to do that. So you know each other's families, you're close with each other's families. So when they have opportunities to grow and challenge themselves, when they've reached their pinnacle, that's why I look at, there's three people here that, we build statues of people sometimes, that John McPhee, Stan Katz, and Steve Herbert, right? You would never put those three guys together. But John McPhee, Stan Katz, and Steve Herbert were here for so long. Steve Herbert's going to his 36th year. Stan Katz was here over 40 years. McPhee, you ride your bike with him. How long has he been here?
He's been teaching his class since the mid-1970s.
Yeah.
I mean, he was obviously a student in the 50s.
And they found a way to grow every year and be better. And I admire
He's still teaching his class. He's going to be 89 years old.
89 years old. And I admire that. That's really hard to do. When I was a young coach, I found it really hard. I had to go other places to grow and challenge myself. And it took me till I got to the Bengals to figure that out. Verbs, he is rare. It's so rare to see somebody who gets better every year doing it at the same place. And most coaches, you get to a certain point and you have to go challenge yourself somewhere else to be better. And that's what, you know, Sean and Andy and Jamel, those guys are going to go and do awesome. And they are great coaches, great people. And when you're in a place or a staff or a athletic department, right, that's where the round number 500 comes in, that is successful and supportive, that's where you get coaches who want to come here and want to be part of this and see themselves grow and challenge themselves. So it allows us to not get stale, allows us to get fresh ideas. And for me, like, I sat in 6 offensive line interviews, unbelievable coaches, every one of them. And Chris Czarkowski wowed me. I left there like, man, I thought I knew my stuff. I coached in the NFL 8 years. I'm like, we're going to push each other as coaches. And I was really, really cool. And I think that's how hopefully our program, we've done that before, and we got to continue to that and grow. And then just cheer like heck for Sean and Andy and James and Jimmy Salgado and Steve Thomas and guys in the NFL, guys that have become head coaches. Ryan Roeder just got on at Penn State. I was like, he just sent me a text, and he was here in my early years. I was like so fired up for Ryan Roeder. His wife worked with my wife, just great, great, great person. So that kind of stuff gets you juiced up as a coach.
One little John McPhee note, by the way, he was roommates with Dick Kazmaier. Yes. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know. Absolutely, I knew that. Some of the stuff he's written on, you know, the teams back then is just, you read, and it's just, I could never write like that. I wish I had 1/10 of his writing ability, but you read it and it's like, wow, this guy's incredible.
So Mike Willis, the new offensive coordinator, a very loyal guy to the program. He's a Princeton grad, a former offensive lineman. He's been here his entire coaching career. Let's talk a little bit about what he brings and what your expectations are from him. I know you're very high on him.
Yeah, Mike was our first recruiting class here when I got the head coaching job. And he was a pain in the butt as a recruit. You know, he was down to other Ivy League schools. He wouldn't choose Princeton until we hired an offensive line coach. That was my background. And he just wouldn't, you know, he was being so stubborn. But it's what makes him great. He's intelligent. He's hardworking. He's creative. He's collaborative. And he's, you know, I think he's got a great sense of knowledge of football. And every responsibility I've given him, starting with an alumni workbook when he was an intern quality control coach, to our recruiting class that he just had as the recruiting coordinator that was ranked number one in the country, every responsibility he has done and done A-plus work. And guys who do things like that tend to, Sean Gleason and Andy Arick and, you know, Jamel and Steve Thomas, they tend to become Mike Mendenhall, Mike White now, Mark Rosenbaum, guys that I'm giving these things. And, you know, the great part is Brian Flynn made a really good impact on our offense now. Now his role is going to be larger. Like, this, you know, circle of life in our coaching profession really is going to help us grow, most likely. And we got to continue to work hard to do that.
Are there concerns about having 3 offensive coordinators in 3 years?
No, I think it's for me, and we've had, this is our 4th one in my 10 years, you know, that way. That the great thing is, James Perry was awesome. And he and our staff, and I would sit in most of those meetings, we collaborate. And so the foundation of our offense hasn't had to change because we've been able to hire from within. Like, we haven't had to make huge structural changes. But Sean had some different ideas than James, and we grew. Andy had some different ideas than Sean, and we grew. Mike's going to have some different, Mike and Brian and Rosie, Chris and Brandon, the 2 new coaches, are going to bring some new ideas, and we're going to sit down together, and that's going to allow us to grow, because sometimes when you're doing the same things, defensive coaches are really good. They catch up to you. You know, so I hope this allows us to continue to stay ahead of the curve.
So you mentioned 2 new coaches because you had to replace Andy and Jamel, who both left. And obviously Mike got promoted into the one role, but that meant you still needed 2 new coaches, and you got them both from the same coaching staff at Lehigh. And you mentioned Mike Czarkowski.
Chris Czarkowski.
Chris Czarkowski, I'm sorry. And Brandon Cuevas.
Brandon Cuevas, yep.
Cuevas. Both coming over from Lehigh, and Brandon is going to be the running backs coach?
Correct.
And just talk a little bit about him.
Yeah, so Brandon happened to be Mark Rosenbaum, our quarterback coach, now our recruiting coordinator. That was his college roommate at Susquehanna. And so We've gotten to know Brandon through the years. He was actually one of his first jobs was at Salve Regina, and he coached with Mike Weick. So you get to know somebody, and he's around, and you're like, this guy's really good. Kind of like I got to know Gleason. This guy's really good. And now he's working his way up the ladder. And then he gets to Lehigh and does an amazing job with Dom Bragdalone, who was one of the best backs in FCS history. And, you know, you're like, okay, this guy's got good work. And so we know him. His one of his best friends in his life is Mark Rosenbaum. You know, Mike Weick, you know, you trust your coaches. They know our culture, what fits us. So, you know, he started on third base when it came to us making the move. And then you get to know him as a football coach in interview, and you're like, wow, this guy is awesome. He's got so much energy. He's so smart, and it's going to really be good for us.
So your program got some nice publicity with a big piece about Princeton quarterbacks and going to the NFL. Kevin Davidson is well-positioned to follow in that path after his senior year. He went to the East-West Shrine Bowl. Now he's going to the NFL Combine. Has an excellent chance of being drafted from everything you hear. What's your sense on where he is at this point?
Yeah, I just saw him on Wednesday. He was thrown in the bubble, and he was phenomenal. Like, he doesn't miss a throw, and it's just so much fun to watch him. He's actually even leaner than he was. He looks so athletic. It's going to be fun to see what he runs down at the Combine. Times are usually a little slower there, and I think he's going to, you know, surprise some people with his speed that way. He's not going to surprise anybody with his arm. They've all done their homework on that, and that's, you know, a major league arm that way, and they're going to love him in the interviews. Like, this guy is a gym rat. He loves football, and when you look at, you know, there's a little bit of a track record with our guys doing really well, you know, in the National Football League, and that helps that they're going to look at our guys have continued to perform well at the highest level and do that earlier than maybe anticipated in the case of like a Carlson or a Horsted, you know, that way.
Yeah, Carlson and Horsted both with receiving touchdowns last year, which was, you know, it's a huge thing for two guys who spent most of the season on the practice squad. John Lovett with a Super Bowl ring, obviously on injured reserve, but still, you know, part of the team, and he walked away with a Super Bowl championship that had to make you smile.
Yeah, you know, you know, you usually are like neutral. You know, you're Switzerland in these games, unless you have a friend or somebody you care about on either side. And
I had a Harvard guy on the other side.
Yeah, so if Johnny was playing, that would have been a little bit different, even more. But you're just happy for these guys. They've worked really hard. They've done terrific in school. They've done everything we could have asked as leaders, as athletes, as people, as high character citizens, their service they do. And to see them go and succeed at the highest level, I think that every coach, you know, it's very fulfilling, you know, and I see it when we put out, you know, Kareem Maddox is in this 3-on-3 thing going to the Olympics. And when we see other athletes, you know, I'm showing around a group of middle school kids the other day, and, you know, I'm pointing out, you know, this guy right here, he's the best lacrosse player in the world, you know, in terms of that. You know, that's pretty cool because it's, you know, as an athlete, sometimes they get in their minds if they don't watch it or see it every day, this isn't really big league sports. And then you start seeing, well, the best water polo player in the world, she's from Princeton. The best lacrosse player in the world, he's from Princeton. Maybe the second best is also from Princeton. You know, you got all these guys in the NFL right now. They're from Princeton. You got
NHL guys.
Girls, NHL guys. You got WNBA girls. You got, you know, and you start like, whoa, you know, they're exceptional. They're high achievers at everything they do.
So looking ahead to spring practice when that starts, and, you know, obviously Kevin Davidson is a big loss. The nature of college football is you're always going to have losses, and we could literally go through the unit by unit to point out where you're missing guys. But for the most part, the team comes back. I mean, you're going to miss two offensive linemen. One was first team All-Ivy. Graham Adamitis graduates. He was an All-Ivy tight end, but Bobo's back. He was also All-Ivy. Quigley was a really good player. I don't want to run through the whole list of seniors, but you know, it's the nature of things to turn over a bit. So every year you're going to have turnover, but you return a lot of really good players. on both sides of the ball. A lot of depth. A lot of guys are back. Really, the thing is you got to find your next quarterback, and it's not like you have a shortage of candidates for that spot.
Yeah, no, that's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Like, we compete at every position, and to see that competition come through, and there's going to be some young players emerge. We're already starting to see that. There's some veteran players that are taking on added leadership roles. I'm watching that, and that's really awesome to see. It's awesome as a coach to see them grow and become leaders that way. You know, the quarterbacks, by nature of that position, are leaders. Those guys have been awesome. They're off seasons. Everything they're doing in the weight room and, you know, how they're leading is exactly what we want. And we get to actually play football starting March 7th and see them grow and really start the competition right then and there. And at some point we'll figure it out, and, you know, the film won't lie, and we'll be able to, you know, see who emerges and hopefully leads us to a quality season.
Speaking of the season, the 2020 season includes two new opponents. It starts at VMI, which is in Lexington, Virginia. VMI was about a 500 team last year in a tough league, so they figured it'd be a pretty tough challenge right off the bat. Also, always nice to go play somebody new and something different. And I looked on their website, and apparently a game day there is quite an event. A lot of fanfare in their stadium. And, of course, the other new opponent, it's not brand new because Princeton's played them in the past, but it's been a while, and that's Army West Point, and that is going to be an unbelievable game. Go up there on October 10th to play at Army at Mikey Stadium. It's I've never seen a game there, but by all indications, it's one of the can't-miss places in college football. And then the other non-league game, Bucknell, is here. It's a great non-league schedule. Just talk a little bit about those three games before we get into the league, and also how Army came to be on the schedule.
Yeah, Anthony
Archibald. Or VMI, for that matter.
Yeah, Anthony Archibald does a great job. It's really fun to work with him when it comes to these things. We haven't had the opportunity to schedule a lot of games because the schedules are done so well in advance. When I got here, you know, Monmouth was the only team really that has been on the schedule that I've had a part in that way. And Monmouth's a playoff team. We've tried to schedule really good teams. And when we first did it, I really wanted to get a military opponent. I thought that'd be great, you know, and playing schools with the military, the discipline, things they bring is going to help our team. Obviously, they're a quality team, and I thought that'd be awesome. And the DMV is a really good area for our alumni and recruiting, and there's a lot of factors, you know, with that. So, you know, Anthony was able to get that game scheduled. That'll be really awesome. It'll be a great trip. Bucknell had been on the schedule from previous. We played them last year, new coach. They really made strides as the season went on. That guy's a tremendous coach. You're going to see them continue to make big strides that way, and that's going to be a challenging game. And then with West Point, we got a phone call. I think it went to Anthony, and he came down the hallway, and he said, "What do you think about West Point?" And I kind of jumped out of my seat because they're a top. At the time, they were not only a top 25 team, but they took Oklahoma that year
to overtime. Oklahoma is actually their home opponent prior to Princeton is Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah, that was a heck of a game. And, you know, if they win that game, they're probably a top 10 team that year. And so I was like, whoa, this is awesome. Like, you talk about challenging your guys and trying to see how we can test ourselves. You know, there's no bigger test than playing an offense we've never seen. That's going to challenge us. A team that is that talented and that successful that way. They took Michigan to overtime last year. So that's going to be, these are challenges. And every game in our league is going to be a challenge. And when you have 10 of them, you know, it forces you to be at your best every single week.
And, you know, the experience of playing at Army is something that they're not going to forget. You talked about the league being a challenge, and you just have to look at how the season ended last year to see what Cornell and Brown did with Dartmouth, to see some of these games that were really tight at the end from teams that were out of it at the time and now are bringing some momentum into 2020. Nothing would surprise me actually for next year. You know, who's the best team? Who's the eighth team? Throw it up in the air, and there's not that great a difference from top to bottom.
Yeah, it forces you to find the smallest edge, right? The smallest edge is going to be the difference. really similar to the NFL most years, that, you know, those teams, the difference between one and another, you know, the best team, the worst team, is usually 6 points, 5 points. So finding the smallest edge is going to be critical, you know, in these games. And it forces our guys to approach every workout, to approach everything they're doing with the utmost, you know, energy, the utmost vigor, the utmost enthusiasm. And, you know, it's really put us to the test. It's put our incoming freshmen, when they get here, they're going to have to understand that we are going to test them with a very, you know, challenges week in, week out.
And I think Cornell's turned the corner a bit. You know, that game up there that Princeton had wasn't easy. Yeah. And they turned around and beat Dartmouth, which I don't think anybody was expecting. And
yeah, week to week. And, you know, James is going to do a phenomenal job at Brown. I have complete knowledge of how good he is day in, you know, when we work together, and he's going to do a great job there. Obviously, you know, Penn has been, you know, tremendous. They have a good long track record. Harvard,
Yale,
Dartmouth.
Dartmouth's probably, you know, the preseason favorite, you know, I guess.
And that's one of the things that some of the coaches who've been in the league longer than I have, you know, there used to be games maybe you could circle. You know, right. We don't have to be at our best. You know, we can rest some guys. That doesn't happen anymore. Like, if you are slip just a little bit, you're not careful with the football, you're out of a gap, you're going to lose that game if your focus isn't 100%.
Yeah, you got to be focused and you got to be healthy in those things. That's what determines what happens. But it's going to be an exciting year, 2020. Looking forward to it. Anything we missed?
No, it was great. 500, you know, championships.
NFL
semester
champions.
Leagues, NFL champions, combine.
All of it.
Chad Knopf in the XFL.
That's right.
Chad Knopf.
So I assume that everybody in the XFL is basically either just loving to play football or, for the top guys, auditioning for the NFL. I assume Chad falls into the second category.
Yeah, he's auditioning for the NFL. He needs experience, needs reps. Unfortunately, he had 5 days of practice, and there was a lot of miscommunication, which often leads to things that aren't good. And it sounds like he's not healthy, and that's why he didn't play last week. But we wish him good health, and, you know, hopefully he gets some games under his belt and that experience he needs to take the next step in the NFL.
I was a big USFL fan.
That was way back. 1983, 84, I'm right there with you.
The Philadelphia Stars.
Philadelphia Stars and Jim Mora, huh?
Exactly. We'll come back. We'll have another podcast with you sometime in the spring, maybe one or two during the spring.
And that'd be awesome.
And then we'll obviously be back each week during the 2020 season. So, Coach Cerace, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, in the spring, 504, 505, 506, 507. Well, talk to you later, Jerry.
Thanks. For Coach Bob Cerace, I'm Jerry Price. Thank you for being with us here on the First in Football podcast. And thank you for your continued support of Princeton football.